participants an opportunity to speak during public comment periods. If you wish to speak during public comment, there is a toolbar either at the top or bottom of your screen that will appear when you hover over it with your cursor. Click on the word participants and a box will open up on your screen showing a list of participants. At the bottom of that box, you can click on raise hand. This will be seen by the meeting facilitator and you will be unmuted at the appropriate time to ask your question or give input. During the time you are unmuted, please make sure that you don't have any background noise such as TVs, radio, and so forth. Even the shuffling of papers can be picked up and cause disruptive audio feedback through the microphones. All of our standard procedures will be adhered to, such as stating your name and address when called on. Comments will be kept to 5 minutes or less, and vulgarity and inappropriate language will not be tolerated and will result in being immediately muted and possibly removed from the meeting. If you are unsure how to virtually raise your hand to participate in discussions, you can call 582-0337 at any time during the meeting. An executive, Patrick, will be happy to assist you with this process. I would like to thank everyone in advance for your patience and cooperation as we work through tonight's meeting agenda. At this point, I'd like to call a meeting to order and start with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you, everyone. Cindy, roll call, please.
Conklin?
Here.
Grunch?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Page?
Here.
Solomon?
Here.
Quorum present?
Thank you. Moving on to the consent agenda. The purpose of the consent agenda is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one commission motion without discussion. Any member of the commission, staff, or the public may ask that any of items or item on the consent agenda be removed and placed as the last item under new business to receive full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. We have item A, approval of the August 25th City Commission regular meeting minutes as presented. We have B, approval to purchase 3 computer towers from Common Angle with Microsoft Home Office and Business for a total not to exceed $3,414 and authorize the city manager to execute the documents. We have item C, approval to appoint James Richmond to the Main Street Board to fill a vacancy with a term expiring January 18th, 2021. And we have item D, approval to appoint Adam Graff to the Main Street Board to fill a vacancy with a term expiring January 18th, 2020. So is there any comments from staff or the public or commissioners on these items?
Adam Graff's appointments until 2022.
Okay, sorry. Make that correction.
I'd make a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Moving on the agenda, hearing citizens' comments. These are non-agenda items. I think a lot of our guests today are here for an agenda item, but this is non-agenda items.
Seeing anybody none, Mayor.
Pardon me, Patrick?
Seeing none.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to, I don't believe there's any correspondence. Mike, let's go to your city manager's report.
Just a couple items for this evening. The second round of dust control on the roads has been completed. The crack sealing program on the city streets is almost complete. We're finding that the high lake levels and wave action have caused some erosion involving the North Lake Street Bridge. And this may require some embankment and side work being done before winter begins. That may require all or part of the bridge to be shut down for a period of time. Tim is working on this matter and will be providing further information as we go forward. So just to let you know that that may be on the horizon. The tree removal program is about a third of the way done, including the tree at the end of Water Street by Cafe Sante. I would encourage the commissioners to check out the expanded view corridor that's taken place with that tree's removal. We'll want to carefully consider any possible replacement tree and its location as we look forward to that. The county's household hazardous waste collection will be taking place this weekend on Thursday through Saturday. People do need to contact the county and make a reservation for that. In addition, the city's household rubbish collection will be taking place on Saturday, September 19th, so a week from this coming weekend. So that's all I have for this evening. If the commission has any questions on these or other items, I'd be glad to try and address them.
Thank you, Mike. Commissioners, any questions?
No.
Okay. We do not have any, well, let's see, reports of officers, boards, and standing committees. In our packets for us commissioners, we have the draft minutes from the August 6th Main Street board meeting. We have the draft minutes from the August 13th Parks and Recreation board meeting. And we have the draft minutes of the August 17th Planning Commission meeting. Commissioners, any questions on those? Okay, moving on to old business, we have none. And moving on to new business, item A, the second reading of the IPMC, International Property Maintenance Code. The way we'll do this is we'll have a staff report. We'll open and we'll also give all staff an opportunity to respond. Then we'll open up to public hearing and then we'll come back for board deliberation. So I think I'm going to turn it over to Scott. Okay.
Thank you, Mayor. Currently, the city does not have any type of property maintenance code. The only tool the city has to address dilapidated structures is the city's dangerous building ordinance. To initiate an action using the dangerous buildings ordinance, the structure has to be significantly degraded or damaged, usually to the point that is economically unfeasible to repair or restore the structure. Over the years, the city has discussed possible adoption of a property maintenance code. However, an ordinance has never been developed and submitted to the city commission for their consideration. In 2018, the city goals adopted by the city commission included the goal of increased housing availability. To help achieve that goal, the city commission tasked the planning department to develop a property maintenance standard ordinance to provide additional tools for improving substandard housing units. To accomplish this task, the International Property Maintenance Code has been submitted to the commission for consideration for adoption. Given the experiences with dilapidated buildings over the past few years and the time and effort required to enforce dangerous building ordinance, a property maintenance code could offer a more efficient, less time-consuming enforcement tool and advance the city's goal of increasing housing availability. A property maintenance code would provide the city the ability to intervene to require deteriorating structures, have defects corrected prior to becoming unfixable issues. After reviewing the challenges and issues raised with the creation of a customized property maintenance code, it was determined that the most cost-effective way to adopt an ordinance was adopt the International Property Maintenance Code by reference. The International Property Maintenance Code is developed by the International Code Council, the ICC. It is a nonprofit member-based association that developed a wide variety of model codes. Historically, model codes were prepared by several different code bodies, such as the Building Code, Building Officials Code Administrators International, the Southern Building Code Congress International, and the International Conference of Building Officials. With the different bodies developing different codes, the application of varying standards across jurisdiction was difficult for builders, architects, manufacturers, and other users of the code. In 1999, the code bodies began to work together to prepare a unified code under the auspices of the ICC. The ICC is dedicated to developing a minimum set of standards to be used in the design, building, and maintenance of safe, sustainable, and affordable structures. The first set of ICC codes were developed in 2000 and included the International Building Codes. The ICC codes have since been adopted in all 50 states, and the International Property Maintenance Codes has been adopted by many municipalities in Michigan and throughout the country. In Michigan, the International Building Codes developed by the ICC were adopted by the state of Michigan and now are the state of Michigan Construction Code. The state construction code does reference the International Property Maintenance Code, and it could be enforced by municipalities that have adopted the state construction code. In Charlevoix County, the choice has been made not to enforce the International Property Maintenance Code, so municipalities would need to adopt the code individually if the municipality wished to enforce it. In Charlevoix County, the city of East Jordan has adopted the International Property Maintenance Code. Other northern Michigan communities that have adopted the code are Petoskey, Sheboygan, and Alpena. In the cities of Petoskey and Sheboygan, the code is enforced by the police departments. In the city of Alpena, they have their own building department that enforces the code. In the city of East Jordan, the enforcement is done by the zoning administrator. As identified by City Attorney Rhonda Stowers, there are several benefits to simply adopting the International Property Maintenance Code by reference, including the following. Thoroughness. The International Property Maintenance Code is drafted with input from code compliance officers, industry officials, and other interested parties. The codes are carefully formulated with input from specialists in the fields, municipal entities, and members of the public. As such, is less likely that particular issue will slip through the cracks. Balance, because the code is created and input of various perspectives, it tends to be represent a balance between the needs of industry, the concerns of the public, and the interests of code enforcement. Readability, the International Property Maintenance Code has been in place for significant time. Its provisions have been honed over the years to eliminate ambiguity and improve clarity. Ease of enforcement. The International Property Maintenance Code has gained acceptance as the definitive code in the industry and the court system. This makes enforcement less subjective to challenge than an untested local code provisions. Also, contractors are more likely to be familiar with and therefore more likely to comply with the code provisions of the International Property Maintenance Code than a tailored local code, lowering the overall number of potential violations. A licensed contractor should not be able to plead ingress. Ease of adoption. If the city adopts the International Property Maintenance Code by reference, it will not be burdened with creating its own property maintenance code. The International Property Maintenance Code is a copyrighted document, as are other codes, so the municipality that is copying and pasting code provisions from other sources runs the risk of unintentionally violating copyright laws. Adoption by reference avoids the risk and the burden of creating a new code. Ease of amendment. If the city adopts the International Property Maintenance Code by reference and has the latest manual available for inspection and review by citizens, the city will not be burdened with the frequent reviews of its property maintenance code to determine if an update is needed. It will simply be a matter of having the most recent version on file. One of the primary concerns that's been expressed with the proposed adoption of the International Property Maintenance Code has been how it will be enforced. This is an understandable concern, and all the Northern Michigan municipalities that have adopted the International Property Maintenance Code have had similar concerns expressed during the adoption process. In all cases, these concerns have not materialized. While it is staff's position that this would also be the case in Boyne City, if the International Property Maintenance Code is adopted, it is suggested that the City Commission also adopt an enforcement policy to ensure the ordinance is enforced as intended. A draft enforcement policy has been provided with the ordinance for your consideration. Please also note the addition of the required revisions in section 5 of the ordinance that fill in specific provisions for the city of Wayne City. The proposed ordinance was submitted to the City Commission for first reading on July 28th and was scheduled for a second reading. As required by the Wayne City Charter, ordinances cannot be adopted until at least 1 month after the meeting is introduced. And the ordinance was scheduled for a second reading on September 8th, 2020. If adopted by the City Commission, the ordinance could become effective 15 days after publication. It is staff's recommendation to adopt the International Property Maintenance Code and enforcement policy as proposed. Unless there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them right now.
Thank you, Scott. Any questions for Scott, commissioners?
Okay. In regards to the code official, that is going to be done through our planning department. Is that correct? With this presentation, that's the intent?
Well, right now, the planning department would be the primary, but others could also enforce the code. The police department, the fire department, other appointed city officials. So, but right now, I believe it is the plan to have the planning department be the lead.
Thank you.
Anything else, commissioners? I'm going to open up to any other staff, department heads.
Tom, I yes, searched out, or I put a question out on the city manager's listserv to check with my peers across the state to see what their experiences were. And very similar to what Scott reported in his report, a number of the communities expressed that initially there was a concern with regards to how enforcement would take place. But they all basically said that those concerns basically faded away once the ordinance was adopted. So the concerns are pretty commonplace, as Scott mentioned, but they seem to work their way through fairly shortly after those communities adopted it.
Mike, do you know how many communities through your response might be using this as a tool?
The number that I saw, it was probably about, in the ones that responded, I saw probably about 20, 25 responses before I left for the weekend.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else, staff?
Out of how many was that, Mike? That you checked, I mean, if it's 20 right now.
Yeah, I don't know how many there are across the state. As I think Scott reported earlier, there is no central place where it records how many communities across the state of Michigan. My email goes out to several hundred managers across the state, and you know whether they all responded that have it or not, I don't know.
Thank you.
Tom, could I ask a question to Rhonda? I see Rhonda's here, our city attorney.
Yes, please, Hugh.
Rhonda, I'm wondering, we're talking about dilapidated buildings here. This serves other purposes too, doesn't it, as far as like rental properties and that sort of thing? Because, you know, there are sections in here that have been a bit confusing to me, like in the section 3 about insect screens, gates, infestation, minimum room widths, ceiling heights, that sort of thing. And I'm kind of wondering, what's the rationale for that being in here?
Are you there, Rhonda?
There we go. That's better.
Okay, thank you.
You know, the underlying theme of the IMPC is to provide consistent standards across a variety of types of structures, you know, for human habitation, and to make sure the goal is really to stop it before it gets to the point of being a dilapidated building that has to be completely destroyed. The goal is to affect those minimum standards so that the buildings are habitable and remain habitable, and to give a means of addressing situations where they are becoming uninhabitable so that you can move forward.
Yeah, the other question I was wondering about is the section 103.2 or point one, where we're creating this department. It says the Department of Property Maintenance Inspection is hereby created. Could we just get rid of that and change to the heading of section 103 to say something like the department or the Property Maintenance Inspection Department under the Boyne City Planning Department? And then 103.2, which is the appointment, would just go right to, you know, the city manager making that appointment.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm pulling it up now here. And you're looking at which section? I'm sorry, 103.
It's section 103. Part two, administration and enforcement.
I mean, you can, just because you're adopting the IMPC doesn't mean that you can't tweak certain parts of it. And you'll see in the second reading that we've added certain sections. I mean, if you wanted to designate, you know, the code official is going to be this, you know, this person, either, you know, the Boyne's code enforcement or their building inspector, or whoever you want to designate, chief of police or, you know, fire chief. You can make those kinds of changes. You don't have to create an entire department specific to the IMPC for your ordinance. I've had municipalities that basically they do it through the building department, and it just gives that the building official, in their case, or a code enforcer in some other cases, the tool to then gain compliance through the application of these standards. But no, you wouldn't have to create like this entire new department and have different people staffing it. I mean, you can reference your current structure without really changing it much.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Hugh.
I had a request that Scott read the memo, which was great. I wonder if it would be appropriate this time to read and talk about the origins of the policy document that's, I think, follows.
Is that, do you have that available, Scott?
If Patrick could show it on the screen right now, we can go over it. Back down, that's the ordinance. Up to the page above that is the that right there. So this is the code enforcement policy that being proposed, and this was originated out of those concerns about what was the intent and what was the goal for adopting this, and what will be our priorities in enforcement. So the background, the Boyne City Commission and city officials were challenged over the years to address issues with deteriorating structures that pose threats to the health, safety, and welfare of their residents. Prior to the adoption of the EIPMC, the only regulatory remedy for these situations was to wait until a structure became so degraded that the city's dangerous building and structures ordinance could be applied to force demolition. This was a long, difficult, and costly process. The EIPMC was developed with the specific purpose to secure public health, safety, and welfare by establishing minimum standards for structures and premises. And the intent, the goal of the city's use of the IPMC is to protect health, public health, safety, and welfare by providing a means to intervene and improve deteriorating structures prior to them becoming serious risk to residents or so dangerous as to require demolition. This goal is the guiding principle for enforcement. The items addressed by the IPMC are wide-ranging and comprehensive, and minor violations will not be considered a threat to public health, safety, and welfare. As such, city officials or their designees will only utilize the IPMC to investigate and take further action if they find that buildings and or property which is blighted and affects the economic well-being of the surrounding properties and or is detrimental to the health, safety, welfare of the residents in the home, if any, and in the surrounding neighborhood, and by requiring minimal maintenance standards as prescribed by the IPMC, the buildings and properties can be rehabilitated and maintained to provide a safe and sanitary housing or commercial facilities, and such rehabilitation and maintenance would eliminate, remedy, and prevent blight and help reduce the eliminate deterioration of buildings and or properties to the point where they will not become a serious risk to the city residents or so dangerous that they need to be demolished. If city officials find that the above criteria for enforcement are met, every effort will be made to work with the property owner to establish reasonable timelines and remedy the violations to standard acceptable under the IPMC. If the property owner makes little or no effort to bring the property into compliance, city officials will pursue enforcement action as prescribed by the IPMC.
Thanks, Scott. Does that help, Dean?
Yes, I think it's useful to go over that before we hear from the public.
Yeah, I agree. Good call. Any other staff report and commissioners? We'll come back to commissioners after we hear from the public, but at this point, if there's nobody else. Yes.
If I could, I apologize. When I'm looking at the draft ordinance that is under review for tonight, I see that we have two section fives, so that we need to make sure that when this is adopted, that the second section five is renumbered. And then in the first section five, we have section 103.5 twice, which was a typographical error. That second reference to section 103.5 needs to be removed, just so we have a clean ordinance that we're passing.
Everybody catch that? Thank you, Rhonda. Okay, at this time, let's go to public input. Please state your name and your address. And we're gonna do a 5-minute limit. Patrick, you can open it up, please.
There are no hands raised currently, Mayor.
Okay. We had one up earlier.
Okay, here's one shown as Teresa Vondra. I'll go ahead and unmute.
Thank you.
Hello?
Hello.
This is not Teresa, this is Chuck Vondra.
I thought so, Chuck.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for your time. My first question is, there has been a change in the document between the first reading and second reading. There's been additions to the document, so I'm not sure how proper that is to go forward with the second reading. It was just recently posted online today, I believe, on the city's website, and there were changes in the document from the first to the second, so I questioned if it's proper to go forward with that or not.
Okay.
Cindy, were there any changes to the posting since it went up on Friday?
The only change was that Scott sent it to us, the memo with a link. He sent it with a link to the IPMC on his memo. That was the change. The change was in his memo.
I believe there were changes to the violations of grass ordinance and different things.
Can you clarify, Scott?
The International Property Maintenance Code has a number of blanks for individual municipalities insert their, you know, their specific criteria for a variety of issues. This, in my opinion, doesn't substantially change the ordinance that's been provided. Perhaps Rhonda can opine on that as well.
Scott, when was that information provided? Was that provided on Friday with the memo, or is that added last minute?
That was provided with the memo on Friday.
Okay, so there were no language changes that you provided since the agenda packet went out on Friday?
No.
Okay, then I'd ask Rhonda to speak, because I think we had this question come up before, and changes of the type that we're talking about generally have not been ruled as substantial where the process had to start over. So I would toss that back to Rhonda.
I certainly wouldn't label these as even changes. What this does is it provides the information that in the IMPC indicates, you know, insert here, you know, your municipality's name or what your fee is, or, you know, what the maximum allowable heights will be, or what dates you'll require these things. It's not changing even the wording of the IMPC or the reference to the IMPC. It's just providing that additional information that wasn't part of the IMPC itself.
So what I think I'm hearing is that, consistent with past practice of the City Commission, between a first and second reading, minor changes can be amended or put in, and the Commission can go forward with considering it tonight. Whether the Commission wants to do that or push it back to another meeting, that's up to the Commission, is what I'm hearing from Rhonda.
That would be correct. That would be accurate.
Thank you, Rhonda. Thank you, Mike. Back to you, Chuck.
Yeah, I guess I'm curious on the board's decision on that, because it's contradictory. You already have ordinances for some of these things, so you have two conflicting documents.
Okay. Anything else, Chuck?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, heavens, yes. I'll continue. The we talk about, or it's talked about, this being for
just to be fair, Chuck, I want to start your 5 minutes over. It's a new topic.
Yeah, thanks. I don't think I'll take five though, but thank you. Okay. We talk about this being for the only dangerous structures and dilapidated buildings, and as Scott said, so dangerous need to be enforced. I don't think that grass height or screens are so dangerous that they need to be enforced. So I don't think that's necessarily true. In conflict with that, we have now ordinances that are either duplicative or contrary on the same topic in the city already. So to say it's only going to be used for that, you're going to have to take away some of the ordinances because you're adding this to it. So that makes it substantially not true or false that that's the only purpose that it's intended for. Most we talk about in the International Property Maintenance Code about discretion, but the document itself says that the most restrictive definition shall apply. That doesn't show the definition of discretion. It's the contrary to that. I'm not certain how this helps with affordable housing. And again, that's contrary to that as well, when the increased cost for this. We talk about being and worried and concerned about affordable housing in Boyne City, and we're concerned about VRBOs or the cost of working family rentals. This will only increase the cost of those things. I have a lot of familiarity, not in VRBOs, but in renting to working families and what affordable looks like. I'm glad to share those at any point. We certainly aren't building and selling expensive homes in the time of crisis with affordable housing. A citizen committee should be afforded and adopted to go through this. I don't buy into the discussion that we have to take the easiest path possible. Boyne City has never done that. I think we've always done what's right for our community. And I say community being Boyne City, not an international worldwide approach to this. How many dilapidated buildings do we have that we have such a crisis that we need to enforce this on? Is a question that I ask of you. And in development, and participate in development code, the most restrictive shall apply. Who's going to enforce that, and who has building knowledge in the city of Boyne City? Who's a builder or a code enforcement person? Who's trained in these things? And quite frankly, as I look at the city structures and drove around at city structures and quite frankly, some housing that some of us live in, they also will not pass according to this code, whether it's your theater or the property on East Main Street, a little gray house at the bottom of a hill, or Avalanche Park. None of those meet the guidelines of your ordinance that you hope to apply. Increased housing availability, I'm not sure how this will help that. I think it actually lowers the availability due to cost. You know, we talked about this a number of years ago when the city passed on a 4-1 vote, I might add. I can tell you who voted no, about everybody has to have a paved driveway. I'm not sure that lends itself to affordable or young families. I think people would like that and do that over time. But again, that's another ordinance that we passed and adopted. I'm not sure how international has to do with Boyne City. There's lots of issues with it. I mean, it deems itself constitutional. If something is unconstitutional, because you declare it doesn't make it so, it's still subject to court review, of course. I don't think this is a hardworking approach. I think it's a, I don't want to say lazy, because I don't think Scott's lazy. I think it's an easier approach to do maybe where you want to go. But I don't think that every day someone has flaking paint on their fascia because they're a hardworking family should be a new violation, which is what this code calls for. So again, I think it's a little overreaching. I am not opposed whatsoever to a property maintenance code. I think this is restrictive and overreaching. I think the city would do well, like they have in many times, apply a citizen committee along with Scott and some city commissioners and invested folks that are favorable to a code, not just people that aren't favorable to it, to develop one that's proper for Boyne City. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chuck. Okay. I see we have more people. Patrick?
We do. Next, we have shown as Nick. I'll go ahead and unmute.
Hello, Nick. Are you with us, Nick? Nick, are you? We got to get you unmuted.
Hello, Nick.
Well, should we come back to Nick, or what do you suggest, Patrick?
We can certainly come back.
I'm seeing him as unmuted at this point.
Nick?
I would suggest you move on to another customer at this point, and maybe Nick can try and get back in.
Sure. Next, we have a screen name as a Samsung Galaxy S8 Active.
Okay.
I think that's Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
Yeah, this is Marty Moody.
Marty. Okay. Can you state your address, Marty?
701 Spring Street, Boyne City, 49712, the Dirt Road Park.
Thank you.
Back to. I'd like to skip back for 1 second to, you know, a couple of clerical things. When Scott did a eloquent job of reading the beginning of the code, I guess I was a little taken aback by where he stopped, that the recommendation was that the staff said just to move forward with it. And even though it's listed as the other options to one, do not approve, two, refer other proposed ordinance back to staff, and three, other actions as the commission deems appropriate. He didn't even read those. And then along with the other one that you were asking about, as of yesterday, the link was not on that memo. It was today. I have them both printed. So I guess if people couldn't get to the link, I don't understand why this has been so hard in that aspect. One more little clarification on that is that I know an elderly lady called down there trying to get it. She didn't have a computer and was told, yep, sorry, you know, it's on a link, but no, we can't supply you with any documents. So it just is kind of unfortunately seemed like this is being the, you know, we're just going to try to get this thing through in Zoom land and not allow people to have a say. And I feel sad about that. But now I'll go on to, you know, some of the talking points. The, you know, Scott, in his reading, he was talking about the ease of the amendment. That, you know what, I had never really paid that close attention to that portion of the IPMC, and that scares me more than anything now that we're even talking more about it. This ease of amendment, you know, basically auto adoption. So there's things that are, again, why do we have anything international? This is Little Boyne City. I don't know when we've ever had an issue solving our issues. And once again, you've tore down houses. I would say that's a pretty solid zoning code that we already have. But I know that quite a few of you have heard from me, and I've expressed the concern that it's not about, you know, it's not so much about this document. It's about what happens when you're gone, Tom. What happens when Hugh and Ron and Dean and Sally, what happens when you guys are no longer on the commission? And I sincerely believe that you have every intention that this is not meant to be a bad tool, but a good tool. But, you know, when you're gone, what happens when the guy from out of the area gets appointed to the commission and he stands there and says, nope, I got my document right here that says I can do whatever I want to your house? That's what scares the heck out of me. You know, how about the, I know I only got 5 minutes, so I got to jam it in here. But Mike talked about the responses that he got from the other communities. He can't tell us how many communities are in Michigan. I don't have my computer with me. I guess I'd like to Google it. But there's a heck of a lot more than 20 or so. So it's kind of like the, a lot of people love to tout in this country that the Washington, D.C. only touts to the 1% of this country. Well, I think this document only touts to the 1% of this community. You know, we're going to create all these Mrs. Kravitzes. And I know a couple of you are chuckling because I've told you the same thing. But it's, remember the old Bewitched show? That was the little old lady peeking through the curtain, sitting there seeing what's going on at the neighbor's house every day. I just don't understand why we need a document like that in Little Boyne City. The one thing that Rhonda said to Hugh's answer, he was like, well, I'd like to get rid of, I think it was 103.1. Can't remember 103 what, but I wrote it. I think that's, I might have misheard. But so we can, the whole reason that I've heard from all the rest of you on this commission is that, well, the reason we have to do this is because the city attorney told us that we have to adopt this document because we can't just pick and choose from this document. And now, here tonight, she says, pick and choose whatever you want. It's just so contradictory. And if the goal is truly to, you know, stop something from becoming uninhabitable, you know,
Marty,
that scares me too. Because we don't live in it. What's that?
Wrap it up, Marty.
Yeah. That scares me too. Because, you know, look at our school system. You know, we're over 50% free and reduced. So now you're going to dictate to these homes that, you know, they don't have any money anyhow. But I'll finish with just what Chuck said. I'm not opposed to a property maintenance code, but let's do one that fits Boyne City. Not
Thank you, Marty.
Yep.
Got it. Thank you. All right, let's move on.
Next we have Tim Nemasek. I'll go ahead and unmute.
Hello, Tim.
How you doing? First name is Tim. Last name is Nemasek. I live at 327 Bailey Street, Boyne City.
Thank you.
All right, so I'll start off with, as commissioners, you guys have to make a decision on if you're following the Pledge of Allegiance and you're going to represent the Republic here, or if you're going to just push this through because this will make things easier for you. One thing I'll say is kind of touching base on something that's been repetitive from the public here as far as Boyne City residents, the changes that have been made from the first to the second reading. I was a part of one commissioner meeting with Dean Solomon. He quote unquote kind of touched on how this commissioner does the due diligence and reaches out to the public and tries to engage the public's feelings and community involvement there. So I challenge you guys to follow suit to that and kind of hold value to those comments and those words. I don't know who's recording this. Obviously you guys are recording this meeting, but you know, you got other residents here that could be recording this Zoom meeting as well. And you know, you got to hold face value to validate that. So there has been changes made because I even attempted trying to get to the link, trying to look at this, and I wasn't able to until actually yesterday late, this morning. So I'll put that out there, kind of a following theme. Other than that, it's kind of funny as far as, you know, this reading that document there where the background here and the enforcement of, you know, copyright, not tweaking this, and now here we are talking about being able to tweak this. If you guys think that screens are needed, or if you think chip paint is going to cause safety concerns, and you quote unquote say that your enforcement of this will be in line with safety concerns, I would ask you, commissioners, who has read this, and what sections would you like to bring in comment now tonight as far as what sections you feel need to be used in this to save Boyne City residents for their safety. Because me reading through it, I see where it talks about square footage has to be 120 square foot per room. You gotta have at least 7 foot ceilings. You gotta have, you know, no chip paint. You gotta have screen doors to stop bugs coming in. No cracked sidewalks or anything on the personal property, but you can walk through Boyne City and take pictures of many public sidewalks that have cracks and issues. So I would kind of challenge you guys to be a little reflective on that as well. What sections have you guys pulled out of this that you feel is needed for the safety of the residents of Boyne City? Kind of going through my notes here, kind of, I'm a homeowner as well in Boyne City. I'm a disabled veteran that lives off from, you know, my VA pension. And my home is not up to date on several of these sections, specifically with square footage. So where does that leave me? Do I need to go pull permits for zoning and talk to a contractor to have them come out and make sure that I meet the square footage of 120 feet per square foot room? I live in a 980 square foot A-frame. My kitchen is my living room, basically. Both bedrooms in my house do not meet the square footage requirement. So what does that do for me? What legal action can Boyne City take against me now? And then again, touching back on public sidewalks in Boyne City, looking at the building at Avalanche Mountain, looking at the theater, there's things at these public, you know, public buildings that Boyne City owns that does not meet this code. So I know Boyne City has the funds to update it and get it to this code, but I do not. What options are there for me? Again, I don't think anyone's safety is in concern as far as my living room not being big enough or, you know, my bedroom not being 120 square feet, but I'd throw that out there. And then the last meeting, there is a lot of terminology be thrown around as far as discretion being used. You know, these commissioners that are here tonight, they're feeling, hey, this is what we would like to pass, but we're not gonna enforce those little things. Well, kind of common sense, you know, when you guys are gone, who is the next guy? What will be enforced? And as far as discretion on what's going to be enforced, say I'm a landlord and I'm renting out my place and my tenant's now upset that, hey, Tim doesn't have 7 foot ceilings. Tim has a big crack down the center of his sidewalk. Now I'm going to report that and that's an issue. Does Boyne City have a recorded public meeting on Zoom saying, hey, this is a city maintenance ordinance that we're going to accept and pass and then have a complaint filed by one of my tenants and then ignore to follow through with that validated complaint by that tenant? Now me as that property owner, and now I'm gonna have to open up my wallet and hopefully I have money there. If I don't, then what are my options? You know, legal action's gonna get taken against me. So there's a lot of little things on this that I don't think has really been looked through And if we're now at this point of the conversation saying, hey, we can tweak this, why would you have in that background paper saying, we're not going to focus on the little things, but you're going to actually leave those little things in this, you know, code?
Tim, you're at 5 minutes. Wrap it up, please.
Okay, so if I think the due diligence of each individual in these positions, you know, you owe it to the Boyne City residents to actually go through and tweak this towards Boyne City. This is not an international city. We don't have an international airport here. We have a very business-specific, community-specific, you know, community here. And I think if you guys did your due diligence, you would actually be able to find a key or find a code booklet that you would be able to implement that will benefit you guys as commissioners and the residents. And you Fair guys enough. Need to tweak this towards Boyne City.
Thank you, Tim. Okay.
Next we have Al.
Oh, hey. Al. Hello, City Commission. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Al. You got the floor.
Looks like Al is muted.
Okay. Al, are you there? You're on mute.
I'm muted. I keep unmuting and I keep getting muted. Is that a sign? Okay, I'm back here.
You're in.
Hi, I'm Al Allen. I live at 1210 Nordic Drive, Boyne City, Michigan. Thank you for taking this time to talk to everybody. I too think that it's a good thing to. Wow. Holy cow. Am I back? All right, here we go. I do think it's good to have a set of guidelines for homes and how they appear and how they're maintained. You know, I've been doing some research on IPMC and all that. But this is a huge document with a huge amount of detail, 65 pages long. There's so much here. This is a document that's an international document. It's used all over the world. And it's hard to believe that something that detailed and that's used so in so many places has to be boilerplated to Boyne City. It seems very heavy-handed. It seems overbearing to the point of where if you look at 104.3 right of entry, does that mean there's no search warrant? That code official can come in anytime they want because they see a minor or violation that they consider minor or major, you know, and who is that person going to be? That's new position. I know that's yet to be defined, but that seems to be given a lot of authority to somebody that is, you know, I don't even know if they need a search warrant. If they can come right in my house, I have a real problem with that. Then you talk about applying misdemeanors, liens, removing occupants. I mean, this is serious stuff. You're messing with people's lives. Transfer of ownership. You can't sell it if there's violations. Who's going to determine if there's a violation that you can't sell it? What happens if you sell it and there are violations? You know, does everything have to be perfect? Does it have to be an inspection every time you sell a piece of property? And what about weeds? Who's going to come by and say that my lawn doesn't look right because I have too many weeds? I mean, it just goes on and on and on, you know, and someone that's rehabbing a home and I mean, overcrowding and minimum area requirements and room areas and what's considered a minor violation. I mean, it's mind boggling almost. And my other concern is, have we done our due diligence? Have we talked to citizens from other cities, other states, other communities that have had to deal with this for 5 or 10 or 15 years? I know in the past we haven't done our due diligence really well. I'm living that right now across the street from me, and I don't want to see that happen again. I want to make sure we do our due diligence, that people do talk to the citizens, that we do know how this operates and what the mechanics are and what the end results are. And I am concerned about if the city commission who we have today is great, if it's not replaced with somebody that's not so great, how they interpret a lot of this. And that's basically the gist of my concerns. I want to support everything that the other folks have said too as well. And I share all their concerns as well. So thank you for the time for expressing my opinion.
Next we have Chris Christensen.
Hello. Chris Christensen, 125 Stewart Street, Boyne City. A couple of the concerns that I have, I mean, I agree with a lot of the points that have been brought up here. I've spoken to a number of you outside of the meeting as well. you know, we go back to the original point when this started, and we were saying that this is basically designed for dilapidated housing, that we're not going to enforce these things. Minor violations won't be considered, I guess, is being thrown out there. But section 106.1 of this code clearly states that if, and in case you haven't read it, I'll read it for you. Unlawful acts, it shall be unlawful for a person, firm, or corporation to be in conflict with or in violation of any of the provisions of this code. So if you're going to start parsing these out and slicing and dicing, you may want to remove that one. Because, I mean, if we're going to selectively enforce this, you're going to be immediately in conflict with it. So 106.1 is one that is of a concern to me. And section 404 that addresses the overcrowding issue. You know, the overcrowding, you know, we talk about how this is going to help affordable housing. And, you know, Marty touched on the fact that 50% are lower reduced lunches or free or reduced lunches. Let's talk about the people that are couch surfing. Let's talk about the people that are living with mom and dad or grandma and grandpa because they can't afford to find a place to live, let alone find a rental at this point, but they really want to be in our school district. So we have more people in that are living in some of these houses that, I mean, it would blow your mind if you knew it was out there, but it's going to be in violation of this International Property Maintenance Code when it's adopted. Okay, so these are issues that we need to address. It's conflicting if the intent, you know, the purpose was to help affordable housing when, you know, this is really going to be in direct conflict of it. And some of the other things that are on here, the screens is interesting. You know, I don't know a situation where not having a 1-inch strike on a door lock has led to a dilapidated house, but, you know, feel free to show that one at some point in time, because that's in this code. In addition to any basement windows that open have to be complete with a rodent guard. You know, I mean, some of the stuff is just, it's a bit overreaching is what it is. And while I agree that there are, I think that there are, there's a need for some of this. I mean, the dilapidated housing thing, I understand the complaints because it doesn't look the way it does. You know, to me, this seems like it's overreaching in that the rental requirements that are in here are concerning me as a landlord myself. You know, I mean, all I need is a disgruntled tenant that's going to say that I'm in violation of this code. I'm going to have to go through some process with the city that, you know, may or may not end up in a court of law. And meanwhile, is my tenant going to continue to pay his taxes or his rent? Is he, you know, or is he going to hold that rent off to the side until we get this resolved because I'm in violation of some rule that the city put in place? I mean, these are all concerns that we have to face here, folks. And these are things that need to be addressed. And just adopting some blanket international code, you know, while your purpose and intent is good, this thing is rife with potential issue in the future, you know, and I just think that it'd be better served. I think, was it Chuck that made the suggestion that maybe you put a committee together of people that are concerned with a combination of city people, maybe bring in a builder or a realtor or whoever. I mean, you know, there's gotta be a number of people that are willing to parse this document and make it more official. I mean, you know, the irony about Boyne City, when we go around the area and people ask about Boyne City and what we do and what we've done, we've always been leaders. And in this scenario here, rather than create our own, rather than carve a path or lead a path, we're just going to glom onto something that somebody else did because it's the quicker way to do it. And it seems like it's probably an easier path because, well, East Jordan did it and Petoskey did it and Sheboygan did it. So it might as well be good enough for us. So that's all I have right now. Thank you.
You're muted, Tom.
Okay, thank you. Patrick, anybody else?
None at this time. We do have one additional, William Church. I'll go ahead and unmute.
Thank you.
Hi, Bill Church, 1025 Wilson Street, Boyne City.
Thank you, go ahead, please.
Okay, I guess, My biggest concern here is the enforcement aspect of it and one person having all power for it. Or I guess from what I'm reading here, the planning, whoever's in charge of this has the absolute say on it. And I guess I'm concerned with what happens, like it says, later on down the line in years from now. That's my biggest concern with this. Because I have a school-built house that does not have a kitchen area, but we do have a kitchen type area. But according to this, I'm in violation of it because I don't have the proper square footage. So, and that was done by a school, by Boyne City Schools here. I guess I'm just reading through this and very concerned with how everything is kind of showing and what it's reading to me here. I guess I'd like a little bit more clarification for a lot of these things. I guess that's it for me.
Okay, thank you, Bill.
Next we have Joe S.
Okay, Joe.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
So 1125 Nordic Drive, I did take time to read through the information last minute. Again, some availability issues that were brought up by other people. Just wanted to say, you know, I'm agreeing with all the previous people that have chimed in, especially the overreaching aspect, and just feels like we're kind of taking a big stick to go after a small problem, I guess. And just in an effort to be part of the solution, if we were to, you know, set this aside and look at doing a more specific document, I would be willing to volunteer to be on a committee or to help with that in any way possible. To, you know, if you're going to be have issues, you need to try to be part of the solution, and I would put myself out there to help with that. And had some experience in writing documents like this. So again, this is just almost scary, overreaching future issues, enforcement issues. Everything everyone has said is pretty spot on this not being the right document for Little Boyne City, as someone put it. And I know we're trying to grow and grow properly, but just don't feel that this is the correct solution to make that happen. And as a homeowner, again, would like to see the town grow properly, and again, would volunteer to be part of the solution and help with any document that we can put together that might be a lot better than this document. Thank you for your time.
Joe, I didn't catch your last name.
Slegel, S as in Sam, C-H-L-E-G-E-L.
H-A-L.
L-E-G-E-L, Slegel.
G-E-L, okay. Appreciate that, thank you. Okay.
Next we have Rhonda Stowers.
Okay, Rhonda.
I just wanted to address some of the points that have been raised with respect to my comments, just so that we're all on the same page and I'm not misunderstood. When I talk about tweaking the IMPC, what I'm talking about is there is sections of the IMPC where it says bracket, insert city name, bracket. There's a part where it says bracket, insert dates, bracket. Those types of things are what have been put in this ordinance. When we're talking about making the building code official, the person that enforces it, as opposed to setting up a brand new department, it's little things like that. I'm not talking about going in and willy-nilly changing every provision that's in the IMPC. And I also want to be very clear about how, at least in my experience, the IMPC has been enforced in municipalities. And it's also been my experience that the smaller the municipality, the more likely it is to want this ordinance. And the reason for that is they lack the resources to sit down and hash through all the possible code variations, all the very myriad of choices that you have to come up with what would be the appropriate building code and address all of the issues that can lead to problems in the future. I can tell you from my experience, I've got a municipality that's a mile square. It has adopted the IMPC, has been using it for at least 15 years. We've had maybe two enforcement cases a year, usually not even that much. This is not a code that lends itself to minute violations, because when you're going to court on a violation, you're giving notice of a violation. The goal is towards compliance and fixing what's deemed to be a public health, safety, welfare type issue. Most municipalities do not have the resources to take someone to court every time their grass is 16 inches instead of 15 inches. This isn't going to require people to tear down their homes and rebuild them so that they have proper sized kitchens. But the goal is to address problems before it becomes so dangerous that you're now having to really have no choice but to tear down a structure. I know that the right of entry was brought up, and gosh, what does this mean that anyone can just walk in now? Under 104.4, if you look at it, the homeowner has the right of refusal. And then there has to be administrative and judicial steps that are taken for the code enforcer to gain entry into a home. So this isn't, you know, going to be a Wild West kind of scenario. It does lend itself to addressing issues before they become major issues, because you have situations where a home reaches a point where it's so bad it's a dangerous structure. And before a government can tear down someone's home, there is a lot of red tape and a lot of expense. And you're going to go through that expense to do that type of thing when it maybe could have been fixed easier by, okay, we have someone that doesn't side their house is starting to become weather beaten, so we use this ordinance to get the house sided. The court gives people time. If they say, hey, we're making progress, but we need another 20 days. Hey, we're making progress. Can we push this out 6 months? I've not seen it happen very often where the court cracks down and says, nope, we're done here. It's usually only when the people have made no effort to bring their building into a place where it's going to protect the public and themselves and their situation. So I just wanted to be clear about my points. I'm not suggesting that we can change any portion of this we want to. And yes, the city is free to adopt its own version of this, but it's very expensive. It's very time consuming. It has to be reviewed a lot, and then your builders aren't familiar with it. So there's a lot more enforcement. There's a lot more city involvement. There's a lot more going out to make sure that things are understood in a way that that's not the case with this, because builders are already in tune with this one.
Okay. Thank you, Rhonda. We have some more residents want to speak here, Patrick.
We do, and it looks like it's a repeat from earlier. Tim would be up first.
Okay. Look at my notes here. Tim Nemechek, Bailey Street.
That's correct.
Yes, Tim.
Yeah, so not to beat a dead horse, but kind of just to recap, I would challenge, I hope each commissioner is taking it, you know, again, due diligence, the position you are as individuals, the position you're in. And are you writing down these concerns? Just because other cities and you're not bringing the material to us, you know, some of us might go looking for other municipal areas that has issues with this. I know you guys are not bringing any that are experiencing issues with this to us at this time and saying that no issues have arose from this. That doesn't mean that the concerns are invalidated. I think they're validated concerns. I think you guys represent the public here in your individual positions. And I think it's your due diligence to write down these concerns and touch on it and get the community involvement and the community feedback from it. Try and get the press involved too. On this agenda, you guys will be talking about Petoskey News Review, kind of reach out and try and push that out there. I think you would have a lot more community involvement as far as the in-depth of this. If more people were aware of this, that might not be what you guys want. It might be actually easier for you guys, the less people involved. But again, just touching back on a conversation that Dean brought into a commission meeting in the past, and I challenge you guys to reach out and try and get the involvement there. Because I strongly feel that you're gonna find that not so many people feel the necessity of, you know, the chip painting on the exterior of the house, the tall grass, et cetera, et cetera. Because if the majority of what you want to pass is not, you know, safety concerns and your guys' focus is safety concerns, as commissioners, take that challenge. I mentioned it last. Maybe someone wrote it down as a commissioner. Maybe it's going to get brought up in the future by one of you commissioners, but accept the challenge. What sections of this do you feel are the primary concerns for the safety of individuals and residents of Boyne City? Highlight those three sections. Just pick two sections, and let's really focus on those and how they differ from what we already have in place to protect the residents and the safety of them in Boyne City. So that's basically all I got.
Thanks, Jim. Okay. Next, Patrick.
Chuck Bondra.
Okay. Yeah, real quick. Thanks, Tom. I noticed Rhonda's unmuted and she said two or three bites at the apple here talking about things, but on her first go around, she talked about uninhabitable. No one disagrees with Rhonda on uninhabitable. Nobody on this conversation has disagreed with Rhonda on anything to do with that. But grass, tall grass, doesn't make it uninhabitable. So this ordinance does have things in there. In spite of what she is saying, she talked about Wild West issues on her last go around. These aren't Wild West issues about grass. No one disagrees that there are uninhabitable houses and they should be addressed. And no one has suggested that we should rewrite the building code for the builders. Nobody believes that. Builders understand more than anyone. I don't think anybody in this conversation has said to make this so unusable or so unique that builders don't understand it. So I think that's an unfair interpretation of what we're saying. I think that's drawing a bigger divide than we're trying to tell you guys here. Everybody here agrees with something, just not all of this. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Chuck. Okay.
Next is Chris Christensen.
Yes, Chris. Thanks again, Tom. You know, the Rhonda brought up the siding as an example when it gets weathered and trying to get ahead of it. You know, the one concern that I have is what if those people can't afford to side their home? You know, what if they can't afford to have these things done, but you're going to run them through a system of court, unless maybe you're going to give a discount on taxes and they can apply their tax money to getting their house sided so that it conforms with whatever ordinance you're going to pass. I mean, just a thought there. But in reality, the cost it's put on, I mean, I've got a neighbor over here that never comes to the house. I've lived here for over 2 years. I've seen them once. I mow their lawn just because I don't want to look at it, but that's me being a good neighbor. Okay. I mean, I'm not going to wait for the city to come along and then complain because the grass is so long because they haven't been by to mow it in 4 months. You know, so again, as far as a lot of this stuff goes, you know, this is one of those cost factors that, you know, it's going to be a huge concern, especially, you know, when we're talking about housing affordability. So that's all I wanted to mention. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. What do we got, Patrick?
Marty Moody.
Yeah, can you hear me, Tom?
Yep, gotcha, Marty.
Okay. You already gave me my time, so I'm not trying to take up a lot more, just to expound on exactly, you know, what was said by Chris, Nick, Chuck, all the rest of them. You know, Rhonda, again, spoke to, you know, a few different aspects, and that she, you know, it was only insert here type things, but I still just don't, it doesn't, it's just too far reaching, especially when, you know, you have a code enforcer. Your whole document talks about a code enforcer. So you have judge, jury, and Chris brought up the point that what if you can't afford, you know, the siding aspect right now? She said 20 days and then she corrected it to 6 months. Well, who's going to make call that shot? And, you know, we talked a little bit about the driveway thing. You know, Chuck brought it up in the very first one, you know, that you got to have a paved driveway. Do you know how, I don't think the city understands how much that's impacted new housing in this community. You know, I mean, because for the average person that's just trying to, all I want to do is build a little house, that's very, very heavy weighing on, you know, the cost of doing that business. So I guess, you know, it's been said a few times. I beg the commission to pause and let's, you know, let's have this where we can do a face-to-face meeting. Again, it's been said by a few of these people, I'll gladly sit on this committee for however long you want me to sit on a committee, you know, and try to come up with, you know, however you want to work with Rhonda and get the right verbiage in this. But international, it just, I was the one who said Little Boyne City, and I'm still proud of Little Boyne City, and we don't need an international property bill. Thank you all.
Thanks, Marty. Okay.
We do have one just listed as resident who has not had a chance to speak yet.
Okay. Go ahead, please. Do we have, we have you ready to speak. Can you hear us? We cannot hear you. Mm-hmm. Any suggestions there, Patrick?
We can try again later, maybe move on to next in line.
Okay.
And then a couple to repeat, Nick again.
We didn't hear from Nick the first time, did we? Nick, are you
with us? Oh, we tried there as well.
Yeah, Nick, are you with us?
I believe so. Can you hear me this time?
We can, yes.
Hey, thank you. Okay. Nick Rocky, 1123 Nordic Drive. I am a builder. I am not a computer guy, so I don't know how to work this microphone thing.
Good so far.
So just to touch, you know, I want to say, you know, thanks to everybody and all the information that has come to light. I could not agree more with everybody who has spoken up. I have had a chance to read through this, and my limited understanding with 25 years in the construction field is the way that the ICC building codes are broken up. They are international. They don't necessarily need to be referred to as that. They just are the building code, the residential code, the fire code, the plumbing code, the mechanical code, the electrical code. There's 15 of them. And this one that you are looking to adopt falls into one of those categories. The interesting thing about it is really all it is an overreach of everything else that has been combined. Meaning, if you have somebody in place who is a licensed official in one of those other codes, they can enforce any other code being brought up like you're bringing up now. So if there's something that has to do with building, then the building code, whoever the building inspector is, can take care of that. If there's something for safety, well, then the fire marshal can take care of that, or it could be the building inspector that could take care of it, depending on what the safety issue is. Those rules are there. They're great rules. And I don't really understand why you need a redundancy in these rules. I guess where I struggle with this is the overreach. So if we have codes and we have rules and we have people in place to already enforce them, why do we need to take it one step further and have somebody who's not maybe licensed or somebody who's, you know, proficient in that field enforce something they don't really understand? That's my question. Why is that necessary?
Okay.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Okay. Tim's been on a couple times. Is he want to be on again?
Yes, we do have two who have been on previously, both Tim and Al.
Okay. We'll be wrapping this up soon. We can hear from Tim and Al.
Okay, we'll go to Al first.
Okay.
Yeah, just a quick one here, guys. As we move forward and we look at the future of Boyne City and the future of construction, one of the trends you see in the industry is downsizing. And actually, along those lines, is downsizing to homes that combine living spaces. And they call them, you know, mini homes or tiny homes. So as we look at that new industry trend, make sure when you look at that, you look at this document and see how that may affect that. Because that is one way that people are being able to afford homes and to bring in affordable housing. And these are actually very nice homes, very livable places, and in some places very beautiful. So I don't think you'd want to prevent that trend from being something that may happen here in Boyne City. That's all I got, Tom. Thanks.
Thanks, Al. And is Tim with us again?
He is.
Sorry, so real short. There's a few individuals that say, hey, several sections, my house isn't in compliance right now. My house isn't one of them. I bought my house on a VA loan, government-backed, you know, mortgage. I'm not compliant right now. I don't have the ability to open the wallet and to make my home compliant. So what are my options? And that is a question I'm asking you guys, and I'd love some feedback. And if you can't give me that answer tonight as far as what happens to me now, because one option that comes to sight is, oh, if I don't have the ability to repaint my house and put a new roof on it, I'm going to have to sell my home. Well, now I legally cannot sell my house according to this code, this ordinance. So now what are my options? I cannot financially afford it. It's a VA government-backed loan. So do I have, am I forced to walk away because now Boyne City legally is not allowing me to sell my home? So kind of walk me through what you guys think would be the appropriate and, you know, appropriate response to that. Because me, I'm not in compliance. I think there's two others that are on record tonight that I'm not in compliance. And if you start looking through the amount of houses in Boyne City that are not at compliance, we keep talking about affordable living, you know, the small house, the little livings lifestyle, like the individual just got done speaking, that's affordable. That's affordable housing. I can provide example after example how this eliminates affordable housing. So I'd love some examples and some input how it's going to create affordable housing in Boyne City. But if I can't afford to get my house compliant right now, what's my options going forward in 2 months when you guys adopt this?
Okay. Anything else, Tim? Okay. I think Tim's checked out. Anybody else, Patrick?
I'm showing none at the moment.
Okay, at this point, I'm going to close the public comments, and we're going to, I'd like to hear from Rhonda, I'd like to hear from Scott, and I'd like to hear from Mike on some of these points, and then we'll go into board deliberation. Just some summaries or some viewpoints, some advice. Scott?
Oh, okay. Sure, Mayor. It's my understanding that existing structures built to code at the time, you're not going to have to bring them up to the standards now. What this ordinance is, a maintenance ordinance. So what it's looking at is deterioration of structures and making sure that they do not deteriorate to the point where they become dangerous structures. And that's a focus. Yeah, there is comprehensive and there's a lot of stuff in here. It is, you know, a lot of things that we don't have the capacity to administer. And in those cases, as we discussed before, we would look to consultants that can be brought in for various areas of expertise to look at specific issues. But again, the intent here is not to look at typical structures and look at typical homeowners to bring them up to some certain standards. The intent is, and the goal is, to identify structures that are on the road of deterioration and be able to intervene before they become dangerous structures. And it's much more affordable to save a structure than to build a structure. And that's where we come in with the affordability aspect, because building a new home is very, very expensive. Saving a home is a much more affordable way to do it. In the last 5 years, we've tore down or had tore down at least a half dozen structures. If we could have intervened about 10 years ago, we probably could have saved some of those. So that's where we're coming from. So we're not looking to set a standard that all these homes that have existing fine dwellings need to be brought up some new level. So if they're built to code at the time, they're fine. And we're not going to initiate any new standards for them homes.
Scott, can you touch on a little bit that we're not winging this? We have researched this, and we brought in the gentleman from Alpena, who has been guiding us, probably the main leader, the best expert in the state of Michigan.
Yeah, I've talked to a number of building officials, and Don Gilman, who is our hearing officer for our dangerous building officers, has made several presentations to the city commission. We've been looking at this type of ordinance for over 2 years and probably a half dozen meetings on discussion at the planning commission and city commission. So no, it hasn't been taken in lightly, and we have looked at, you know, other options, and this seems to be the best option.
Thank you, Scott. Mike?
The comment came up earlier with regards to, you know, what am I hearing from my peers around the state? I don't have firm numbers with regards to how many of them have adopted this code around the state, but I have not heard from any one of them that said it was a mistake or they've had problems with it in their community. So I guess that was the main point that I was trying to get across. Whether the commission wants to move forward tonight or to digest some of these issues that have been raised or whatever, that is up to the commission to determine at what pace we move forward on this.
Thank you, Mike. Rhonda?
Thank you. I just want to say just a couple of things with regard to enforcement based on what I've experienced. And I brought up the lady with the siding, and it wasn't just that her siding was starting to look bad. The siding was off of her house. She had an entire wall that lacked siding. And when you have a case like that, it is the code official making that decision that that's something that needs to be corrected and that they are going to enforce the code. But that also gets reviewed by the city attorney, that also gets reviewed by the court. And these cases don't tend to end in fines or jail. I mean, in the 18 years I've been doing this, I've seen one person jailed for basically refusing to do anything whatsoever. If there's any action at all that's being taken forward, that's taken into account and the time is extended. Which is why I indicated, you know, 20 days and then 6 months and sometimes a year with just regular reviews. Is there progress being made? Because the goal is to have livable housing. It's to get the house back to where it can be safely rented or it can be safely lived in. And I think that's important. With regard to the sale, it's only when you have an active violation that you've received notice of, it's been flagged, and it's an issue that, I mean, in any circumstance, you would have to make a buyer of your home aware of that type of a condition in your house regardless. I mean, based on whether it was a code or not code. And there is provisions in there that allow you to sell the house with such a condition, and it sets forth in the ordinance how to do that. But it's just not used that way in the municipalities that I work with. It's used as a gentle guide to get the house that is in danger of becoming a dilapidated building that must be torn down, a dangerous structure, getting it from going that direction to going the other direction. Courts work with people. The city attorney works with people. It's not, at least in my experience, it's not something that's used to beat anyone over the head. It's to get everyone back to where the house is better and the lives are better.
Thank you, Rhonda. All right, well, let's go to Commissioner deliberation. Ron, let's review a little bit. So it's the second hearing tonight. If this is approved, then it becomes law 15 days after publication. Is that correct, Scott?
Yes.
Okay. So before us is those decisions. So Ron, let's start with you.
Okay, well, I guess I have to go back to intent. You know, and the purpose of this process has been to, you know, prevent problems before they become a real problem. And it's at this point in time, I'm not in favor of, you know, approving this as it's presented tonight. I could add a lot of things to this, but I've taken a lot of notes here and appreciate everybody's input that's been here or been listened to tonight. And what Chuck and I believe Chris had mentioned, Chuck Bondra and Chris Christensen both bought a citizens committee, you know, to review this ordinance, that it's and things that aren't, you know, compatible to our city or don't fit in the Boyne City's that's one of the things that strikes me as a positive step as far as still moving forward. The other thing is too, we might table this whole thing till this COVID-19 thing ordinance is put to bed and people can meet face to face and have a very positive outlook when we approve it. And I think the other thought too is, you know, customizing this to fit Boyne City. So, but at this time, I'm not in favor of approving as presented. So I may come back with a different thought or two. So thank you.
Thanks, Ron. Dean?
There we go. Yeah, so, you know, we started this process.
You're muted again, Dean.
Lost you, Dean. Start over.
How's that? Is that better?
There we go.
Sorry. Okay.
Whoops. I think we lost you again.
All right. Is that better?
That's better.
All right. Hopefully I'll stay this time. Yeah. So as I was saying, I started this process when we have talked about this over years now, pretty much a skeptic for many of those same reasons that have been discussed this evening. I remember us talking about torn screens. I remember us talking about peeling paint and kind of wrap our heads around this idea of using the IPMC as a way to solve the problem. In that problem, you know, as we've talked about many times today, is try to keep structures from becoming so dilapidated they need to be torn down to protect public safety. You know, it started to make sense to me a little bit more the more and more we talked with experts and our attorneys and heard from the experiences of other communities. And I thought about this more as looking at the whole thing instead of trying to parse out individual elements of it. It started to sound like an option that we should consider a little bit more seriously. We've certainly taken our time on this and given it careful consideration, all the options that we might have. And I know the discussion of this issue predates my involvement, you know, as a commissioner. So it's been a long process for sure. You know, after considering all this and considering having an adopted policy to place boundaries on it, makes sense to me now. And, you know, I really think that despite the concerns that were expressed tonight, it's going to be okay. You know, we know that from all the communities that we've heard from, that it has worked the way they had hoped it had. I think it's fair to say it hasn't caused major problems. Some of the fears that were expressed here that also have been expressed in other communities haven't come true. And my sense is that this is the best shot that we have right now to be able to address this issue. Again, is to keep structures from becoming so dilapidated, we gotta tear them down. So I am in favor of moving ahead on this. I do think there's some things that we can do as we implement this that will help further address concerns. One of them is, I think it was mentioned during the last Planning Commission meeting, at least in the minutes it was, about the idea of, you know, having clearer communication about what this, if we adopt it, is, how it works, be able to have some sessions if folks are interested on learning more and interacting directly with those responsible for enforcing this ordinance. I think that as a commission, we should be looking at this carefully since it's new, as it's being implemented, to see how it's working. And if there are issues, to be able to either correct those or make a decision to do something different. So those things together, you know, convinced me that waiting doesn't help us, that we have certainly done our due diligence with this and talked about it many times in open session. And the option that we're talking about tonight is at this point our best shot at being able to address this issue and certainly worth giving a try.
Thank you, Dean. Sally?
Yes, and I've listened to everybody speaking, and I have gone round and about myself about this because, you know, I am in one of those little houses that could come under fire, but that's not the reason I'm concerned. I'm concerned that we come up, I agree with Ron that coming up with a policy that works for the city of Boyne City. And I don't understand what the rush is to go forward. I think what he said about, you know, when the COVID virus thing is even over and we can meet, and there are plenty of people that want to volunteer now to talk about the issues that they're concerned about. So I'm kind of where Ron is about this at this point. That's it.
Thank you, Sally. Hugh?
Scott, I'd like to go back to the 6 homes that you said had been removed in the last few years. How many of those people were homes were occupied?
None of them.
So they were out of town landowners or property owners or people?
They were vacant structures that were just unmaintained.
Right. Uh-huh. Nobody was living in them.
Right.
And they hadn't for many, many years.
Yes.
How do we handle tall grass complaints now?
There's an existing weed ordinance on the books, and we administer and enforce that. And the insertion of the 15 inches into the International Property Maintenance Code made that consistent with the existing ordinance.
So that's what we do now.
Yes.
And then we put a lien on the property if they, or whatever, we hire somebody to do it. If they don't do it, and then we put a lien on the property. That kind
correct
of thing.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, I've been troubled by room sizes and minimum ceiling heights and, you know, really trying to get my mind around that. A lot of this, well, I shouldn't say a lot, but a good portion of it has to do with commercial buildings, doesn't it? This, the property maintenance code, commercial buildings, you know, they talk about hallways, making sure stairways have railings, making sure there's a light in a room, you know, and just those type of things. So a good portion of this deals with commercial buildings right now, doesn't it? Or
it covers all structures.
Yeah. So right now, if there's a problem with a landlord owning an apartment building that doesn't do any maintenance on his property, does a tenant have any recourse other
currently?
Than to, pardon me?
Currently under our existing
ordinance. Yeah. Is there anything that tenant can do to, you know, to an abusive landowner?
Not through any city ordinances, no.
Okay. So it would just be something that you'd have to initiate in court.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I wish this international property maintenance code was a little bit cleaner for you know, but I understand what we're trying to do, and I understand the code, and I do have confidence in, you know, our attorneys, and, you know, talking to other communities and professionals that know far more than I do. I believe it was Nick who was talking about why this is necessary, because we have a fire marshal and we have these inspectors already doing these types of things, but that's not necessarily the case in Boyne City, is it?
Yeah. Yes.
You want to answer that, Scott?
Well, my understanding, the state construction code covers a lot of the items that are covered in an international property maintenance code, but the Charlevoix County, which is the enforcer of the state construction code, does not enforce these provisions, and that's a choice that they have made.
Okay. So what about, Elle had a question about tiny homes. Do you or Rhonda have an answer to that, how that would...
Well, the zoning ordinance already has a minimum square footage for a home. And in most districts, it's 672 square feet. Homes still have to meet building code standards of the day. So, you know, whatever those building code standards are for minimum room sizes or bedrooms or bathrooms or kitchens or that kind of thing, they're still going to have to abide by that. But as far as zoning goes, we just have the ground floor minimum of the dwelling at 672 square feet.
Okay. You know, I guess I'm bothered too. I don't know. I didn't have any problem getting using the meeting agenda packet to, or maybe I already had the property maintenance code up and I didn't go use that link. So, I mean, it bothers me that we have something so critical that some people could take away from and claim that we were trying to hide something, which really, really bothers me, because that wasn't the intent at all. And, you know, I just wonder if maybe we need another couple weeks to make sure that all the links work, everybody has access to it, so nobody can make any kind of accusation that we were trying to, you know, pull a fast one, because that's not the intention at all. And, you know, personally, I get offended when people, you know, that's it, you know, that's the criticism you get when you sit meeting after meeting and, you know, you try to do all your due diligence and try to educate yourself to have it boiled down to that. That would be very disturbing to me. So I support this. I would vote yes for this, but I, you know, if we wait 2 weeks to just make sure that we've got all our I's dotted and T's crossed, I certainly could live with that. So, thank you.
Thanks, you. Well, I'd like to speak for one group of people that we haven't spoken about yet. My 6 or 8 years on the commission here, I've had 30 conversations with people asking, why can't the city do something about my neighbor? And it's not that the color is the wrong color or they don't like each other. It's the fact that there's rodents going into the crack in the foundation. It's the fact that bats are coming in through the broken windows. It's the fact that the value of the house brings down the value of their piece of property. Their neighbors is putting a bad neighbor on their own house. And I've had that conversation over and over and over. And my answer is, we don't have the tools. We don't have an ordinance. We don't have the tools to address that. And Scott's right. Once a house is abandoned, then we have to go through a very, as Rhonda pointed out, a very expensive and process that costs us a lot of money. And it takes a lot of time. And by then it's too late. But we need the tool to take care of neighborhoods. This is increasing the livability, the walkability, the neighborhood as a whole is much improved when you improve the weakest link on the block. And we don't have that tool. So I'm in favor of it from that standpoint. I'm also in favor of it from the standpoint that we have done due diligence. We have been talking about this for many, many years. We have pulled in experts. We pulled in, as I mentioned earlier, the expert from Alpena, who said that this is the way to go. We talked to our lawyers. This is the way to go. It's cumbersome. It doesn't work to write your own ordinance. And with that being said, I respect the 9 people that have spoke tonight with their concerns, but I think we have the same concerns. We don't want our police officer to overpower, to knock a door down and go say that your paint is chipping. That's not going to happen. It will not happen on our watch. It's not our intent. But if the policeman is, well, these are all speculations, so I'm not even going to go there. I just think that it's a tool that we need. Now, I think something else was said earlier. We can tweak this. We can adopt this. And if it doesn't work as we intended, we can tweak it. I think Dean said that. We have the opportunity to try it. And we also have the record on record that it works great in East Jordan, it works great in Petoskey. Charlevoix is adopting it. It works great in Alpena. And it's the word international scares people, but it just means that it has wide acceptance. I agree with the things that are said that, okay, a lot, some language are not going to be, it's not our, the solid language in there is not our intent to go in and enforce, such as room size. So would it be better to put this on hold and go through it, or would it be better to try it? Try it on our professional opinions advice or professional staff's advice or professional lawyers' advice. And all the research we've done said this is a good working document. So I am in favor of moving forward. I am in favor of keeping an eye on it like we do all of our ordinances. We just changed a lot of ordinances to help the housing niche. And of course, we're keeping an eye on them. Did changing those ordinances have the intended consequences that we wanted? And this would be the same thing. We pass an ordinance and make sure that the consequences are what we intended. If not, we can revisit this. So I guess I'm in favor of moving on forward tonight. So you've heard from the 5 commissioners. You've heard from staff. We've heard from the public. We can have further discussion, or I would entertain a motion.
I'll move that we adopt the International Property Maintenance Code and enforcement policy as proposed.
I'll second.
Any further discussion?
Just one comment. You know, there are certainly a number of people this evening who are quite concerned appropriately about this, from their perspectives and the potential impacts, unintended impacts. I wonder if there would be a way, if we do end up, as we move toward adoption, of further engaging individuals. We talked about education, but also to help us keep a way of those individuals being able to engage as we get more experience with this to see how it's working. Maybe a more informal sort of thing, but something that we might be able to look at to help further calm fears about future impacts of this ordinance. Just a comment.
Would there be a timeline associated with that, Dean?
Well, you have to adopt it and then have something to talk about. So, certainly within the first year of implementation, it seems like there'd be an opportunity for individuals to express interest in being on that list, if you will, to be that they can receive updates about the implementation of the ordinance at the appropriate interval, certainly within a year, and then be able to engage with the planning department.
Thank you, Dean. Any further discussion? Yes.
This is Mike. A couple things. With regards to that, you may want to consider like a six-month check-in period if the commission does go on to adopt this, and then have it included in part of the planning department's annual report that is presented to the city commission. I think that would give us a little bit more time than waiting a full year for the first check-in, just to see if we have anything else. And also, Tom, I know that you have called closed public comment, but there is still one hand up from one of the speakers that's spoken multiple times, and I didn't know if you wanted to go there, but I just want to make sure you are aware of it.
Thank you, Mike. I'm Tim, with all due respect, I'm going to follow protocol, and the public commentary session is over. We did hear from you three times. We appreciate it, and believe us, we did listen. We are listening. But at this point, if there's no further discussion, we have a motion, we have a second. Roll call, please.
Grunch?
No.
Needhammer?
Yes.
Page?
No.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for your input. We are listening. Let's move on to, I'm going to find my agenda here. Transfer of business, park lot number 5. Mike?
Thank you, Mayor. In November 2010, Bud and Nancy Shear and their business, Industrial Magnetics Incorporated, donated what was and still is vacant lot 5 in phase 2 of the business park to the city of Boyne City. IMI has indicated that they now need that lot for future expansion. Also with regards to tying into current expansion on their site in Wilson Township, and also for future expansion. IMI is currently getting their current expansion approved through Wilson Township, where it resides, to significantly expand the size of its facility there. In another few years, IMI would like to build a 20,000 plus square foot facility on Lot 5. And as part of their current expansion, they would also like to build a new access drive to Lexmar Drive to give vehicles an alternate route to their current and soon to be expanded site. So they would be able to get in where they can now off the front of their site, off of M75, and then their hope would be to create a new access drive through Lot 5 fairly soon, that could then go out either Mall Drive or Air Industrial Drive. Lot 5 is just under 5 acres in size and has a natural gas transmission that bisects the property generally from east to west. If Patrick brought up the map that it is shown for this, it's outlined in black, the site that we're talking about, and it also has the yellow X right through it. Indirectly related to this is IMI's donation in 2000, to this donation in 2010 was the plan of the Humane Society to purchase our lot 11 in phase two of the business park for a nominal $1 fee. That sale never took place. Instead, the Humane Society purchased the former Charlevoix County building, which is now their current site. I spoke to their executive director, Scott McKinley, several times, and he has indicated that they have no need for lot 11. The return of Lot 5 to IMI was discussed at our Economic Development Commission meeting on August 31st, and they approved a motion that would basically transfer that lot back to IMI, covering the taxes that were lost during that period of time and covering any transfer fees, but no other costs associated with it. Cindy has done a calculation on those lost taxes over this period, and it's just under $19,000 at this time. So it's the recommendation that the City Commission approve the EDC's recommendation to transfer Lot 5 in Phase 2 of the Business Park back to IMI in exchange for tax losses and associated fees, and authorize myself and the City Clerk Treasurer to execute the necessary documents to.
Thank you, Mike. At this time, is there any other staff members that would like to speak, or is there anyone from the public that would like to speak on this topic? We're all set. Patrick?
We do have one hand raised from Tim from earlier. I'm not sure if it's still up as an error or if he'd like to speak on this. Oh, it's disappeared.
Okay. Very good.
So none currently, Mayor.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Patrick. Nobody from the staff. Okay. Let's move on to board deliberation. Let's see here. Dean?
Yeah, just a question about the calculation of lost tax revenue. Was that just the city's tax, or was that the total tax bill?
That is a total tax bill. Most of those years, since it was acquired in 2010, the city actually paid taxes on it, so the other jurisdictions are pretty much already whole. So the main loss was us because we actually paid the taxes.
Great, thank you. Thank you. It sounds like a fair exchange to me.
Thank you, Dean. Sally?
Yeah, I would say the same.
Okay. You?
Mike, can you share us what their plans are?
Again, they're going to do a major expansion on their current site in Wilson Township to the north of their existing complex. I get the impression it's going to probably about double the size of their facility. And then they're also, again, then they have plans for a future expansion. And Ben told me it's going to be, he thinks in about 2 years or so, 2 or 3 years, where they'd build another 20,000 plus square foot facility.
That's great news.
I agree.
I have no questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ron?
Good with the proposal.
Okay. I am too. I'm in support. Would entertain a motion?
Well, I would move the City Commission approve the recommendation of the EDC to transfer Lot 5 in Phase 2 of the Business Park back to Industrial Magnetics Incorporated in exchange for tax losses and associated fees, and authorize the city manager and or city clerk treasurer to execute the next necessary documents.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Meehammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Salomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunge?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Okay. Moving on to sale of business park lots 3 and 4, phase 1. Mike?
Patrick, could you actually go to the map, please, while I go through this? Thank you, Patrick. What you're seeing on the screen before you is the intersection of Air Industrial and Lexmar Drive, immediately to the east of Great Lakes Energy's facility. Immediately south of Lot 2, you'll see it used to be Brownie Maskow's building, which is now 1-800 Stencils. And immediately to the east of Lot 3 and 4 is Lexmar building itself. So you can kind of get yourself situated. Lot 2 had been owned by Gil Redmer for a number of years, and he operated a number of businesses out of that facility. It's recently been sold to Brooke Walsh and his Northern Michigan Escapes, and he is interested in expanding their operations on that site, and is looking to acquire lots 3 and 4, which basically are immediately east or north of the site. The property would be sold to a firm that he has set up called Flying Dutchman Holdings LLC. The two lots, Lot 3 is 0.82 acres in size, while Lot 4 is the bigger of the two at just over an acre at 1.17 acres. So together they make 1.99 acres. This is in the original section of the business park, and that section did not have as well-defined rules with regards to engagement, basically trying to get businesses to build there to create family-sustaining jobs has been the goal of the community with regards to this the business park development. So we didn't want people just speculating and holding on to it. That's why there's also a list of conditions that were included with regards to this proposed transaction that would incorporate basically the same restrictions and provisions that we have for the newer section of the business park with lots 3 and 4. This was also discussed at the EDC's meeting on August 31st, and they recommended that we go forward with this. Mr. Walsh and his team are fully aware of all the conditions and are very excited about the opportunity. One of the opportunities that you might want to explore at some point in the future is the possibility of putting some type of workforce housing component for workforce that's tied to his businesses on a second floor or something of these properties as he looks to expand on them. And that was something the EDC is interested in exploring. We're obviously not making any commitment to that, but we would at least like to explore the option. So the EDC made the motion to basically recommend the selling of these two parcels at a price of $36,500, and then authorize, again, the city manager and city clerk treasurer to execute the necessary documents. And I'd be glad to answer.
Thank you, Mike. Do we have any comments from staff, department heads? And do we have any comments from the public? Okay.
Showing none.
Thank you. Let's move on to, let's see here. Sally, you want to begin, please?
Yeah, I don't see a problem with it unless I'm missing something. So,
okay. Hugh?
Oh, this looks like a great opportunity. So I guess, Mike, one thing I was wondering, how do you arrive at a price? These aren't appraised or anything, are they? Or how do you, what does the EDC do that?
We're generally looking at somewhere in the 20,000 an acre range for prices in the park, Hugh. That varies a bit on the location with regards to it. We also factored into that portion of the property on the east side of lots 3 and 4, real close to that yellow line that goes between it and Lexmar. There's a natural gas transmission main that runs from north to south or south to north, whichever way the gas flows. that they couldn't build a building on. So we gave them a bit of a price reduction with regards to that as well.
Thank you.
Thanks, you. Ron?
I'm okay with it.
Dean?
I'm good.
Okay. I'm in support. Would entertain a motion.
I move to approve the recommendation of the EDC to sell lots 3 and 4 in phase one of the business park back to Flying Dutchman Holdings for $36,500 and authorize the city manager and or city clerk treasurer to execute the necessary documents.
Second.
Tom, you do, yes. You do have a hand that's raised from an audience member.
Okay. I guess because they weren't there before. Let's see, what do you think, Mike? We're at a point of making a vote.
I didn't recall if you'd asked for public comment. We usually allow, you know, public comment on any items coming before the commission. So I didn't know. If, okay. I know you asked for staff input, I really didn't focus to notice if you asked for anything else.
I thought I did.
You did, but, you know, this is awkward sometimes with Zoom, and maybe the person just couldn't do it before it's okay. Time. I would appreciate hearing.
Okay, thanks. Patrick, can you address Samsung?
Sure.
Can you hear me, Tom?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, it was just me. Mine was just more of a clerical question. I don't have a problem with any of the lots that you're transferring. My question was going to be to probably Michael. So the sales fees, then they'll have to still pay, you know, normal tap-in fees and stuff like that if they're going to take on city services.
Mike, you want to address that?
Yes, that would apply for both transactions that we're considering.
That was all.
Thank you. Okay, back to, we had a motion, we had a second. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Page?
Aye.
Salomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, moving on to next item. Is the 220 pavement rehabilitation project. We'll turn that over to Tim.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Our 2020 pavement rehab project was completed back in June, and we received the final invoice for that work about a month ago. We came in about $18,000 underneath the awarded contract amount. So I asked the contractor, who is Reith Riley Contracting, to give us some pricing on some additional asphalt preservation overlay work. So we identified a number of streets, 4 in total. And based on the pricing that they came back with, it appears that for a little over that $18,000, we could put 1.5 inches of new asphalt over top of Mechanic Street from West Michigan to Bay Street, make a repair, and then overlay Bay Street either side of Mechanic. Specifically, the west side is not good at that location. And then 2nd Street on the hill between McKinley and Terrace Street. Those three streets would get some kind of minor repairs that would be done by the public works staff first, and then Reith Riley crews would come in and overlay them with 1.5 inches of new asphalt. The cost for doing that is about $21,000, so it's just shy of $3,000 more than what we had remaining in the existing contract. So my request is that we give, or the City Commission give approval to proceed with doing those three projects, which would be kind of a joint effort between the Public Works Department staff and Reith Riley. So the original purchase order that was issued would need to be increased by $2,947. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Jim. Any comments from staff or the public? Okay, nobody's there, Patrick. We'll go to Hugh, you wanna start?
Sure. Tim, is the rest of Bay Street going towards West Michigan gonna be in the schedule sometime soon, because it's not in very good shape?
Yeah, it is not in good condition. One of the challenges we have with that section in particular is it's a substandard width. So, you know, if we're going to rehabilitate that pavement soon, we should really kind of look at the engineering that would be required to bring that road up to a proper width. So I wouldn't commit immediately that we would be able to add that one in, but I would look to do that soon, yes.
That's all, thank you.
Thanks, you. Ron?
I'm good with the proposal.
Dean?
Yeah, I'm good with it as well. It was nice to see something come in a little bit under budget for a change and be able to do more with our money than the trend of rising prices that always has been challenging us for the past couple of years.
Thank you. Sally?
I'm good with it.
I am too. Would entertain a motion.
I would move the City Commission amend purchase order number 5696 to Reith Riley Construction for the 2020 road rehabilitation project by $2,947 for an amount not to exceed $277,952. Further, I recommend that the city manager be authorized to execute the documents.
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, moving on to 220 Parks and Erosion Controls Projects Materials Procurement Recommendation. Tim?
Again, thank you, Mayor. We have six major projects that we hope to accomplish still this construction season. So they'll be coming, you know, pretty fast and furious over the next 8 to 10 weeks. Those range from the Trailhead parking lot and pathway at the Boyne Forest Trail, which is the former Horton Bay property, the Ridge Run Dog Park Agility Area, the Avalanche Trail Signage Project, the F. Grant Moore Marina Sidewalk Erosion Project, which incidentally we did receive a grant for from the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, the Sunset Veterans Park and John Street Road End Park erosion issues, and then the airport parking lot trailhead restrooms projects. A few of these are, you know, well in the works, but some of the real construction and some of the major materials purchasing for these various projects is going to exceed the required kind of minimum amount that would normally require city commission approval. So I'm requesting authorization to proceed with negotiating with these vendors, and where possible to get more than one quote for these materials where that's allowed under each one of the various grants that are listed in the memo. And there will be a few circumstances where materials could be sole sourced, and I think really specifically on some of the erosion control projects where there might be a particular erosion control mat or stone that may be available from only one local supplier in Michigan because of the nature of their licensing agreements. And if that's the one that we're recommending to move forward with, that we have the City Commission's authorization to sole source some of the materials under these various projects. So that will allow us to stay on track. And as I noted in the memo, I'll commit to stay within both the confines of any grants or agreements that we have and pledge not to exceed the approved budget without seeking City Commission approval. And obviously approval of Mike on any of these purchases. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Tim. Do we have any comments from staff, department heads?
I'm comfortable with this, and that's why we're bringing it to the City Commission. There's a number, as Tim mentioned, there's a number of projects we'd like to get done while we still have the construction season to work with before weather changes, as it's already starting to change with rain and things of that nature. So if we're going to try and get these done this fall, this is really the only realistic way to do it.
Thank you, Mike. Any comments from the public?
Showing none.
Okay. We'll go to board deliberation. Ron?
I'm good with the request.
Dean?
Yeah, I'm good with the request. I wish we could add to it a requirement for a warm, dry spring so all these things can be accomplished, but I'm not sure that's within our power.
Good idea. Sally?
I agree with Dean, and yes.
Okay, Hugh?
Yeah, I'm good with it, and I appreciate, Tim, you know, your effort here and getting organized and really, you know, making an effort to get some of these things done, and they've been out there for a while, so I appreciate that and hope it works out. I would say one that could wait if the weather gets bad or whatever would be the airport parking lot trailhead restrooms that, you know, that could maybe be done in the wintertime. And I was wondering, do you have any update on, there were some issues at the trailhead parking lot with the, not the EPA, but Eagle, I think?
Yeah, so we had to go back to Eagle, the former MDEQ, to get reapproval of the plan for constructing the parking lot because we shifted the location about 300 feet after we encountered the liner, as I think I had previously updated you on. So we changed the geometry of the parking lot and changed the location. So we had to go back to Eagle to get that approval. I had an on-site meeting with the Eagle representative. She did not indicate any concern. In fact, actually support for the second location being probably better than the original location. So I think it's just administrative time that we're waiting on getting their letter of approval. And as soon as we get that, we can jump on it.
That's all, Mayor. Thank you.
Thanks, Hugh. I want to echo Hugh's comments that we appreciate your diligence in getting these things done that's been on our list. So congratulations. Nice job. And I would support a motion.
I would move to recommend authorizing the Director of Public Works to procure materials for the parks and the erosion control projects to be completed this fall and winter, subject to budgeted amounts and final approval by the city manager.
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Salomon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on to the next item. It's newspaper of record. Cindy?
That would be me. We were informed by the editor of the Boyne Gazette in late July that his publication would cease and the following day would be the last publication. So In the meantime, back in 2011, the News Review was going to be our second one that we were using, and we've had to use them from time to time when we had tight deadlines. So I went out for bid, put a notice for bid, and also sent the bid request to the Charlevoix County News, the Petoskey News Review, and the Charlevoix Courier. We received two bids back. It was actually one bid and it encompassed both of the News Review and the Courier. The best price that we feel would work and get our information out to the largest number of people, even though it was a higher price than the Courier, would be the Petoskey News Review. And that was for $16.35 per column inch, Tuesday through Thursday and Saturday, and then $18.80 per column inch on Fridays. So before you was a request to have the Petoskey News Review be our newspaper of record for the city of Boyne City moving forward.
Thank you, Cindy. Is there any comments from staff? Or is there any comments from the public?
You have one hand raised from Chris Christensen.
Okay. Chris?
Yeah, thank you. Just one question, a quick question. Since the Gazette stopped publishing in July and the first reading and the second reading of the IPMC were no longer published in the Gazette, were they published in the News Review so the public that doesn't read the internet or doesn't have internet were made aware that those public readings were taking place? Just yes. A question.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Cindy. Okay. Let's go to board deliberation. Dean?
I'm good.
Okay. Sally?
I'm good too.
You?
Good.
Ron?
I'm good.
I am too. I would entertain a motion.
I move to approve the Petoskey News Review as the newspaper of record for the city of Boyne City.
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Salomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Moving on to good of the order, commissioners. Sally, you have anything?
Nope.
You?
Good.
Ron?
None.
Dean?
Good.
Okay. Well, our next regular city commission meeting is scheduled for September 22nd at noon. It is 9:25, and I will make a motion to adjourn.
Tom, you do have a raised hand again.
Oh, okay. I believe that's Marty. Patrick, you can let Marty in.
Can you hear me, Tom?
Will.
Yep. Go ahead, Marty.
Well, I just would like to say thank the commission for at least hearing everybody tonight, mainly on the IPMC. I was a little disappointed. It sounded like there was three commissioners that kind of thought that maybe tabling it for a couple of weeks might do better just to get, some involvement. But I did really appreciate Mr. Kane stepping in and saying that I think you need to push up your review a little bit sooner. So we'll hope for the best, and we'll hope that everything that you guys said tonight is exactly how you'll stick to and adhere to the policy, and that it's not that it is only for mainly the inhabitable properties. So thanks again to you all.
Thanks, Marty. Okay, anything else? It is 9:26. I'll make a motion to adjourn.
You still have two more hands being raised.
Oh boy. Well, go ahead. Patrick.
One second here. This is Tim Nemechek from earlier.
Yes,
I would just like to echo that. Thank you to the commissioners in that. I am disappointed, though, because I kept hearing at the end there that for years and years and years, quote unquote, many, many years, this is new to me. I just had noticed, I found it yesterday, started looking, found it. But I would say that not one single commissioner gave one section out of this as far as the safety. At the end there, I heard the purpose of this, you know, really isn't to increase the property value of your neighbor's property or stopping animals from going into houses, but it was the intent for the safety, and I really didn't, not one commissioner offered up that that subject, which is pretty disappointing, but thank you for your time.
Thank you, Tim. And we have someone else?
That's all I'm showing for now, Mayor.
Okay. Thanks, Patrick. Well, thanks, everyone. Appreciate it, and we'll try it again. It is now, what time is it? It is now 9:28, and I will make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Mike, thanks for making yourself available on your vacation.
Kathy's got some great dinner waiting for me. I'm ready to get to it.
Good job, everyone. Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Meathammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Salmon?
Aye.
Motion carried. Good night.
Good night. Thank you.